You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Bob, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you. And it's also good to be with our listeners out there, and you know where they are.
In Cyberland.
Cyberland, right. Okay.
Stuart Copeland, writer from Vancouver, started the Cyberland
thing. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's all from him.
Yeah. Good stuff.
We'll kick off today's show with a question from Michael. Hello, Bob and Jim. Zero hedge headlines block out the noise and stay invested, and there's little interest to be risk off in this market. It looks like the financial pundits are advising to buy the dip in a geopolitically high-risk environment. Others are advocating portfolios that outperform in a war economy. Bob, I'm confused. I thought that when the world goes to war, then everyone suffers. I would have thought that sagging economies, tariff wars, stagflation, and shooting wars would have crashed the markets by now and would have sent the U.S. dollar, oil, and gold parabolic. Bob, what's really going on here?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, there's... You're looking at the news stories, and you want to focus just on the price action. And, yeah, they were calling to buy the dip on the correction. And also, as we've noted, often in a year, you can have positive attitudes into around mid-year, or let's put it, face it, around now. And then the markets, you know, we've been in a great financial bubble. That's the point. And it's had a huge peak right at the first of the year. Now, two things were going on, Jim. One is the market was celebrating the start of the Trump presidency. And then behind that, I took it as so straight up that it could be the culmination of a great financial bubble. And this would be number six. Number five was 1929, and the first one, the South Sea bubble, was in 1720. So there's a pattern, and it's fascinating that the key items that we follow for tracking the action from great bubble to great bust, it repeats. Although, so the players, participants, and governments in 1720 invented the first great bubble. Then the next following ones, they occurred, and all of the participants did not have the recipe for what to do in a great bubble, and they follow the pattern. So there's four main features. One is that real long interest rates decline a little with the bubble. They have done that. And then they go up, and they have increased somewhat. In the full catastrophe, the increase in real long rates can be about 10 percentage points. It's up about 2.5 percentage points now. And then the other one is in a bubble, gold's real price goes down a little. And then in the bust, gold's real price goes up, and this has been happening. The other one is that the senior currency becomes chronically firm. Not yet chronically firm, but I think it's sorting itself out, and perhaps after August it can head up. So, and they're quite methodical is the point to get across. And if the peak blast out at the first of the year was the peak of a bubble, then we're in for a very serious contraction. And you can call it a post-bubble depression, if you wish, whereby the usual 3 to 4 year business cycle continues, but each of the recessions are severe, and each of the recoveries modest. And this actually, there was the 1873 bubble that completed in June in England, as they say, was followed by a lengthy depression. And then even the 1929 one was, of course, very evident, and everybody's well known, but the others in between 1825, 1873. Now, in England with the 1873 one, the recessions were, the contraction was severe. So by 1880, senior economists in London, which was then the financial center and the main economy, actually started to call it a Great Depression. And it was the only way they could explain the chronic weakness since the bubble of 1873. And then that lasted for 20 years, and the depression bottom was 1895. And then everything recovered going into 1920 with a huge boom in commodities, and then 1929 with the huge boom in paper stocks, and then the crash, and then the whole cycle, depression thing repeated itself. So this is more or less on track. And then the other one is a separate study that I've yet to publish, and I've called them tyrannical centuries. And our own experience began in the early 1900s. And the mark of a tyrannical century is unrelenting inflation conducted by governments, unrelenting wars conducted by governments, and even not just wars against countries, but wars against its own citizens, massive intrusion, rules and regulation until they just ruin the economy. And one of the features that we'll watch for is the big boom in inflation, which we are getting lately. Now, when this price inflation ends, then the whole house of cards comes down. And so the price inflation is important. So here's, we have done a tyrannical century, maybe 120 years, something like that. Now, the previous one began in 1500, early 1500s, when all of the gold and silver bullion from the New World came, and it went into coinage largely. But here was the greatest windfall in history. Spain was the senior government then, but guess what? It wasn't enough. So they issued debt hand over fist and depreciated the coinage until eventually Spain was no longer the senior nation, and that's how they do it. And so the previous one, we don't have a price index on it, and that was the one, a third century in Rome, but you have an excellent record of all the currency depreciations. So you know that it was inflation, and you know that it was unrelenting wars. And then the Emperor Diocletian, towards the end of it, he realized that the inflation was very bad. So he put in price and wage controls, which made things even worse. And then the whole thing blew out and went into a lengthy contraction and was eventually a lengthy reform. So even back in Roman times, there are indications of the same thing, a tyrannical century. And prior to that, Jim, there's just not enough evidence around. You can't say anything one way or the other. So, but it's built in, and our tyrannical century, which, as I said, began in the early 1900s, is reaching its extreme. And folks are getting fed up, and I think there will be a massive shutdown of intrusive government. So, hallelujah.
In a situation like that, what's the best way to protect your money?
Yeah, gold has always been gold. It's the reserve. It's everything. And if you go to short-term instruments, once this contraction gets going, as represented by T-bills, the rate of interest is going to decline and towards zero. But here is the thing, is it's popular these days in the media, from people who should know better, Wall Street types, that they're saying that when the Fed starts to cut, the party will continue. But I can show, you know, a couple of hundred years of evidence, is that when the interest rates come down, the economy comes down, and stocks come down. So, in the good times, in a boom, short rates such as T-bills are going up, and then the Federal Reserve pretends to be in charge by raising short rates, and it always has a story for it. And then when it's over, the T-bill rate turns down. Now, it's past its high of a couple of months ago, but you can't say that T-bill rates are in a downtrend. It's just sort of stuck there. But we're watching for when the T-bill rate really does roll over and head down, and then you're looking at disaster. But in the meantime, there's a lot of Wall Street types and academics as well who think that falling interest rates are going to be good for things. But as I say, a couple of hundred years of evidence shows that short rates go up in the boom and they go down in the bust. So we're watching for this. It's not happening yet, but it seems, who knows what happens after August. And often, you know, that if there's going to be a financial crisis, the probabilities are that it'll be discovered in the fall. So we'll just watch and see how things go over the next couple of months on this one, Jim. Yep.
The White House is screaming for lower interest rates because higher interest rates cause U.S. debt to increase even faster. Are they correct to call for lower interest rates?
And the cost of that, yeah. There's one thing that Trump is not, doesn't understand, that he's interest rates, and he's been leaning on the Fed to cut rates, and the Fed can't cut rates while the Treasury bills are still firm in yield. So it'll be an interesting period over the next few months on this one. Hitherto, my only criticism of Trump is that he wears his ties too long, and then now he's confused about the Fed. So, however, everybody has a chance to get learned about it. So, yeah.
Are bonds a way to protect yourself in bad times?
No, not the long end of. Real long rates go up hugely in a bust, and it's Mother Nature's way of saying don't play the bond market. And so long treasuries have not been good, and they won't be good in the bust. Junk has been good because there's people have thought that there's no risk. And well, that was what our questioner had. And when short rates go down, it says disaster. That's T-bill rates. And in the meantime, you got junk risk has been very popular. So the junk bond price has been acting well for a couple of years now, very well. And it reached a high of 96 a couple of months ago, and it has not doing anything But we watch the junk bond price closely, because if it had turned down in price, that means reality and risk is becoming back into the market again. So it's always fascinating out there, Jim.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy as we take a look at some headlines right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, headline number one from the American Thinker: big, beautiful coal is here to stay. I thought we were trying to get away from dirty coal.
Yeah, actually, coal-powered electrical generation, they've got the whole system cleaned up rather well. The Chinese are putting in coal-fired electrical plants maybe one or two a month. So keeping the U.S. and Canada out of coal-generated electricity is a foolish item. It just won't know. As I said, the burning of coal for power generation is now a very good system.
Is this a case of they're just moving the pollution from automobiles, because in China there's the big push to go to EVs, and just moving the pollution to someplace else where you don't see it?
No, I think coal is good. They've got the plant sorted out. And also these electric vehicles, they're polluters of the first order. I mean, you've got children working in mines, mining the rare earth elements that have to go into these things. And, oh no, electric vehicles, they because nothing comes out of the gas, out of the exhaust pipe, they're considered pure. But to make the things, and then you got to gain. If everybody suddenly starts using electric vehicles, there won't be enough power to power them. So it's best to let the market sort of the whole thing out here. And I'm sure that electric vehicles will be, I don't know, shall we say, left on the grid?
From Newsweek, house value declined, spark alarm, something big could be happening.
Yeah, I thought that was quite a good spark alarm. That's a good headline.
Is that because so many older people rely on the equity in their homes as protection, whereas a source of income from, say, reverse mortgages?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a strong headline that house prices are declining.
Mm-hmm. I guess also, too, you look at how much the cost of living has gone up. Who can afford the down payment on a house?
Mm-hmm.
And seniors who want to downsize are finding that people can't afford that big, you know, 4 or 5 bedroom house.
Yeah, it's a tough market.
Mm-hmm. Now, for people who thought, okay, I'll go live in an RV, Winnebago issues a profit warning as RV sales turn down.
Yeah.
Usually they go up in the summer.
Yeah, RV downturn drags on.
Yeah.
Right. It's that's another distinctive headline that's telling us a story.
Or maybe people can't afford the gasoline to run those, because my parents' motorhome, I'm telling you, it really sucked up gas.
Oh, and yeah.
Back in the 80s, it was over $200 to gas it up. Now it would probably be $800.
Yeah. Well, I remember when gasoline was 25 cents a gallon, and that was a long time ago.
Ah, yeah. How much? What? That would be about 8 cents a liter?
Mm-hmm.
Will America's unbalanced trade doom the U.S. dollar? That from the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, it's a standard representation that the Wall Street writers and policymakers really don't like the U.S. dollar being firm relative to other currencies. And yes, it got whacked earlier in the year. It's trying to stabilize now. And our view is that once you get into a contraction, then the senior currency goes up. And we think the reason for this is that the debt bubble, most of it, of course, is done in the world's financial capital, which is New York City. So what the whole debt bubble is, though, it has to be repaid. So you have to have dollars in order to service your debt in New York with dollars. So in effect, the debt bubble is a huge short position in dollars. And one of the things that, I mean, even Sir Thomas Gresham, who was advisor to the British Crown in the 1550s, that's when the financial market, financial commercial center of the known world was in Antwerp, and Gresham was the Crown's financial agent there, and in letters to Elizabeth, he defined that one of the worst things you can do is to have to service debt from a weak currency into a strong senior currency. Then it was the guilder. And he was very right on that. And this, again, is what's ahead of us. And it will be very painful.
Headline, gold passes euro as second largest global reserve asset.
Yeah, that's a good headline. Second largest reserve asset. It was passing the euro. Now, the euro, contrived currency, was the major asset being held as a reserve is not appropriate. And throughout all of financial history, the reserve has been gold. And it's not been silver. Silver is a minor financial instrument compared to gold. So, yeah, I like the headline.
U.S. retail sales tumbled in May as gas prices fell, car buying stalled. Canadian retail sales in May also dropped 1%, biggest drop in a year.
Yeah, the key word there is tumbled. Retail sales tumbled as gas prices fell. And play on words, car buying stalled. Yep, that's what's going on.
Why are people not buying cars? Are they confused? Should I be buying a hybrid, a gasoline car?
No, it's a market thing, Jim. Just, we bought enthusiastically, and now we can't buy. You know, markets change. And then also in Canada, they got this nonsensical rule that by 2035, all cars have got to be electric. I mean, this is total insane. And I fully expect that over the next few years or so, the insane Liberal government will likely fail. And then the Conservatives continue to show a practical side, and then you would have the political reform that's been sweeping the rest countries in the rest of the world, you know, Poland and various other countries, have all gone from Hungary is one too. Is it all gone from authoritarian government to government by the people, or you know, on the way to that that idea? So, and it can even happen in Canada. So I'm looking forward to it.
Now, we also have the headline, consumers, not government, should be choosing who the energy winners should be.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Sims from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation says if this electrical vehicle mandate goes into effect, it's going to cost the average consumer $20,000 more to buy a vehicle. And even right now, we barely have enough electricity to power everything. How are we going to power all these cars that currently are powered by gasoline and diesel?
Yeah, that's it. And here you have the unelected Prime Minister Carney, and underneath it, he's a real Marxist-Leninist, and he is adamant that you have to change the Canadian economy to help the world avoid global warming. You know, I'm a geologist, and climate is all part of that, and we've been in a post-glacial period, very pleasant weather, warm. It was very warm about 8,000 years ago. And then we had the little ice age down to, and through the 1500s. And then it's been balmy, getting nicer and warmer ever since. But it's an amazing promotion that these agencies can make the wonders, the wonderful thing of a warming climate, they can make it evil. And then they also make CO2 evil. God, you breathe it in, and you breathe in ordinary air, and you breathe out CO2. It's the way it works, and plants transpire and things like that. But I'm very sympathetic to these radicals, Jim. I'm only taking every other breath. I think it's helping.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Jim, good to be with you, and look forward to next week.
I'll hold every second breath waiting. My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy, the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.